Yo, buddy for nothing here, doing a little shorty. Sam Backer and me, Saxon Baird here as usual, the podcast about music and capitalism. Listener, we have a burning question to ask you. Have you found yourself coming down with more consistent cases of nostalgia lately? Do you consider yourself a millennial? Well, if so, you might be soon buying a pricey concert ticket to one of the hottest trends in live music. Yes, you soon will be pulling out your credit card because one of the hottest trends in live music is in touring and live music.
Is it
is
one
happening.
Of the hottest trends in live
the
music?
20,
what we're discussing?
I think so.
It's one of
yes,
the hottest.
I think
it's,
so.
So
it's,
what we're discussing is one of the hottest.
Do, yeah, in, do you want to know what it is?
I guess. Yeah.
It's the 20-year anniversary album tour. Yes, your favorite album of 2004, or perhaps just 10 years, in the 2014 and back in the heady day, the late days of Obama's second term, can be heard live.
What's a good album? Like, I'm trying to remember. Like, what's a 2014 good album?
Was that like a good Vince Staples?
Like, There was good rap. I'm just Googling 2014 good albums.
We're doing some live Googling here. Hey.
We're keeping it loose, baby. Best albums of 2014 Rolling Stone. U2 Unleashed a Surprise.
Oh, God. What?
Yo, I'm just saying. The number 50 album on Rolling Stone's 2014 list of best albums is Yob, Clearing the Path to Ascend, which is a bold choice for Rolling Stone.
What the hell is Yob? I don't even know what Yob is.
Yob is like a drone rock sludge.
Oh,
metal.
Yeah. Wow.
They're really good. I can't believe they were ever mentioned.
Did
in
it come out
Rolling
on Roadrunner?
Stone. It came out on... I don't know.
Doesn't but anyways, while you're looking that up, we'll just say that, yes, the album in its entirety live front to back at a concert venue near you is becoming an ongoing trend. I actually don't know if it's the hottest trend in live music. I was just using hyperbole there. But yes, as a headline read recently by Pranav Chwen, excuse me if I'm getting that name wrong, on the wonderful Passion of the Wise blog, congrats, your favorite album is old enough to go back on tour. Yes, following in the footsteps of the ever nostalgic and risk-averse Hollywood, musicians have been playing it safe lately by, I guess, rehashing pinnacles of their career that maybe they've even moved on from to make like a sure buck on the road. But I don't really know if that's it, because I feel like, you know, like I don't know if Earl Sweatshirt goes back on tour. He doesn't read. People are going to go. They're going to pay money. They don't need to, like, I don't understand. What's happening?
I mean, it's also, is it Doris? Is that the album that it's the 10-year anniversary of Doris?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, we want the 10-year anniversary of that of Earl, just the single. Like, and like, Doris was a weird album. Okay. 10-year anniversary albums that
20
are good.
20-year album, or 20.
Always was 10 years
okay,
ago.
That's
the first
good,
Always
that's good
record.
Yeah.
You're Dead by Flying Lotus, which I don't like okay. very much, but is a record that people like. Metamodern Sounds in Country and Western by Sturgill.
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 Sturgill. Sturgill.
Sturgill.
Sturgill. Oh, 10 years since Black Portland, the best album of 2014. By Young Thug and Bloody J?
Yes. Okay. Right. Anyway, so like Young Thug is definitely not going back on. Well, shit. Yeah, we need a long overdue Young Thug issue. Anyways, so as this article states.
Yeah, this is a good article.
Artists such as Air, Chance the Rapper, The Violent Femmes, Wilco, Nothing, The Killers, Earl Sweatshirt, The Flaming Lips, Freddie Gibbs and Madlib, Weezer, Def Haven, Run the Jewels, Pedro the Lion, U2, Lauryn Hill, My Morning Jacket, Switchfoot, Green Day, and so many more are going on tour to play an album in its entirety that is celebrating some anniversary that I assume falls somewhere between 10 and 30 years. So like what's going on here? What's the take? Cause...
So I think that I really like this piece, and we were like, let's this is a good jumping off point, because I think that like a bunch of different things are going on here that are super interesting for a confluence of a bunch of different things that are kind of going on here that kind of tells us about our moment in the music industry.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, I did a little bit of research and I thought like it'd be nice to just contextualize this within like the broader scope of reunions, which are kind of this.
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's kind of funny, like reunions clearly have gone through different eras. And I think that like the way that they've evolved tells us a little bit about like the music industry at the time. Like, I think initially reunions sort of didn't happen. And they didn't happen, which is fun, right? Like, in the 70s, let's think about the 70s. Your band breaks up. Your band breaks up in 1972, and it's now 1982. Or 73, and it's now 1983. Like, what happens? So, like, for one, I think the touring circuit was less concentrated, less media saturated, and more kind of a integrated set of like local circuits and bigger circuits. So what you get a lot of it, and there's a kind of band that doesn't exist anymore. That's the bunch of people's last names band. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like
Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young.
Well, that. But I meant like the Collins something. Right. All these bands, they would have like BLT, which is like, oh, I forget every member of BLT. Bachman, maybe? No. Bruce. Jack GTO. Bruce. No, Jack Bruce. Anyway, there's like a number of bands where these are famous musicians from other bands. They form a new band, they make an album and tour behind it, and the band's name is the last name of all the people involved. And there's like a lot of these bands. None of them do particularly well, but there's a lot of these bands in the 70s and the 80s. And I think that part of it is just because there's this sense that in a different media environment, you could just go back on the road, right? It's like, oh shoot, it's a guy from Mountain and a guy from Lynyrd Skynyrd and a guy from Cream, and they're going to come to your city and they're going to boogie, baby. And everyone's like, yeah, I'll see that. Sure. Screw it. Right? And it just, the need to have a media presence was different. Either that or people didn't know that much about bands. And so like you can just have a band with like fewer and fewer original members that's further and further away from its peak and just like no one cares. And they just keep touring.
Would you also say, though, that also, like, what we consider as, like, the modern music industry is actually relatively, like, extremely young?
Yeah.
So, like, what's going to be, like, an album anniversary tour? Even the concept of the album in itself, which we've talked about on a previous episode, is still, like, relatively, like, a new and, like, short-lived phenomenon. I mean, it's still living, I guess, but you know, like the emphasis on like the capital A album is also kind of short as well. So it's like, you know, you really aren't getting like the concept of the album as like a capital A album as we know it now until like, I guess, like the late 60s. And even then, like most bands are doing it, but the 70s it becomes a full-fledged thing. So if you're going to do a 20-year anniversary tour, you have to do it like in
the 90s.
1990s. Yeah,
that's a really good point.
So that's also why maybe it's becoming like more of a newer sort of becoming a more popular trend, because it's just more possible now.
I also think it needs to be more possible. I think the musical generation gap is also different, right? As we've moved increasingly away from like the kinds of gigging circuits that helped to define music in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, right? The kind of like more localized live music circuits. And as you like move towards a more mediatized environment, right? Like where what's happening live isn't just happening live in that place or even in that city, but it's ramifying out through the internet and being consumed more broadly. The generation gap that's happened in music combined with that kind of does create a space for a new set of types of live shows, right? So put it this way. A band gets back together in the 80s or kind of, you know, has been petering along. It's sort of been playing with younger bands this whole time, you know? Like a touring band will have played with a ton of other touring bands. A tour was kind of less of a media event and more of a kind of a more traditional traveling work, I would say, just because I think there were more live venues, there was more live performance. Not as many huge shows, but like if you look at, we've all done this, where you look at like what was happening in New York in 1994, like on a given night, or Chicago in 1991, and you're like, there were how many venues? And there's just this whole infrastructure of these smaller venues where you'd have these weird combinations of bands playing next to each other. And so I think that some of the like the time gap nostalgia thing is also created by the fact that there's not this infrastructure of bands, kind of living bands touring for a long time. It's more of a punctuated, mediatized system. You know what I mean?
Are you then kind of suggesting that in that, that it's a manufactured nostalgia? Like it's kind of being like spoon fed to us?
Or maybe...
Because like, for example, like in this article that we referenced in the beginning, on top of the show, the author references like Death Cab for Cutie doing like, you know, whatever 20-year transatlanticism or something. And it's like Death Cab for Cutie is still coming out with albums. They're still on tour. So they're like a living band that's like active.
Right.
Maybe it's only now like every like year or every other year. And also we have to consider that like it's still like a major moneymaker to go on tour. And so like I don't like it, it's this is what I find kind of strange about it is that like in the artists that I just referenced, all those bands are I think all of those bands are still actively recording and touring. So like why the necessity to then play out? And actually the author does say this, like why the impetus to like try to revisit a past part of this artist's career that they've moved on from and are even when they're still active. I think that's like the real mystery here. I mean, other than it's like a sure get, like those shows are going to sell out, but like if they're not necessary, like I said, like if Earl Sweatshirt goes on tour, Earl Sweatshirt's going to sell out anyways.
I mean, so I think there's a couple things and there's two real reasons I can see for it. One kind of music industry micro and one kind of like broader social media macro. The music industry micro, and this is not true for all of those artists, but I think it's useful to think. We've talked a lot on this show about how the major label system has changed and the kind of long-term support a generation of bands got from either better money, right? These are all bands that happened right around when streaming takes off, or these are almost all post-internet bands, right? If it's 20 years. If you don't have the kind of supportive record sales of the underground that existed in the 80s and early 90s, and you don't have the budget and like A&R support of a major, one of the things I think that happened to a generation, especially a generation of like plugged in indie rock darlings, which a lot of this list are, is you rely on the media a lot more. And so I do think that there were a lot more, and I wonder if you could do the numbers on this, but I think it's true that there were a lot more bands that had one big album that everyone paid attention to and then really fell off as they were unable to turn that into a consistent growing career that started right about 20 years ago. And partially because that's a reliant the blog era and the ways that the blog era bubbled for a second and then kind of fizzled and was unable to give people the kind of... There were no 2000s REMs, right, that I can think of.
And what do you mean by that?
Like a band that had a first album that was like white hot, scene-defining vibe. REM's first EP, really. And that then manages to kind of chart a path of like... 5 or 6 albums of like growing, increasing artistic growth and sales. You have a couple, you've got a couple that do okay, right? Like that have like a 3 or 4 album of like relevancy run. But I think in general, you have a lot more bands that have one album, even big bands, or that have like 1.5 albums. And they have 1.5 albums that just at this moment. And I wonder if what we're seeing a little bit is like the echoes of a very specific generational media environment, which also is hitting the group of people who now are 20 years later, who have the money to drop tickets for a big reunion. or a big album.
Yeah, so what you're suggesting is that, like, I'm just going to pull a band out of my ass. I don't even know if they've done, like, a full album, like, the concert tour. But let's say, like, Interpol, I feel like, is the first band that came to mind.
I was thinking Interpol,
so, like,
too,
so
actually.
So you're saying that, like, you know, if Interpol goes on tour just as, like, Interpol playing, like, music from album four, like, that, like, they're probably going to have to sell cheaper tickets in a smaller venue, opposed to, like, if they, like, do a concert tour where they're playing Turn Off the Bright Lights, like, in its entirety. So there's, like, an economic aspect to that as well, because it's, so it's like, yeah, even though these artists have moved on from this, like, pinnacle of their career, or one of the many pinnacles of their career, it's, they know that, that, like, it's more of a moneymaker. I mean, I could also see, like, also this also being, like, related to, like, the reliance on touring as well, where if that is, like, your main way of making money, like, Earl Sweatshirt goes on tour, like, in the fall and then goes back out on tour in spring, like, I'm still pretty sure he's still going to sell out. But, like, if you keep doing that and keep going on tour and constantly on tour, at some point people are going to be like, well, I just saw him, like, 4 months ago. So it's, like, kind of adding, like, a new dynamic. Like, that could be also, like, another element to it.
Yeah, no, and I think that segues really into the what I was thinking about the said my second point about the kind of social media macro. I mean, just back to Interpol for a second, I do think it's also, like, the question is, like, whether they got robbed, whether conditions were such that pushed them towards one big album and then a fall off in attention just because of the media environment at that time. That there's a lot of bands like that. But what you were saying about Earl Sweatshirt, I think, is really right on. And I think that it's also about the changing meaning of live music in a social media age. Because I was thinking, is like, okay, the answer to that problem, right? Why do I want to keep seeing Earl Sweatshirt? Is you make the shows really good, right? There are bands that are just like...
Facts.
No, I'm not saying that it's not really good. I've never seen Earl Sweatshirt.
No. I see what you're saying.
But,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
if
exactly,
it's a great show, if it's really good live music, like, you know, you can just tour forever and no one's ever going to get bored of you because it's a party and it's great. And there are a few things that are better than good live music. And, like, people just keep coming because then they have a community around a band. But I think the thing that's different about that, that's different from, let's say, the 70s or 80s to today, is the importance of social media as an element of live music, right? That you're not just, the audience isn't just there. The audience is also online and they're sharing things online. So for one level, if that's true, as much fun as it would be to see so-and-so every time, I do think that there's something a little bit different where you're like, well, this is the fourth time you're sharing pictures of an Earl Sweatshirt show in 3 years. And like...
Right.
And the flip side of that, I think, is that why, and this is why I really think that these kinds of packaged album performances are happening, is that I think that there's a way that live music is commoditized for social media, right? And so this isn't just a live show. This is a clearly organized live event that means a certain thing in a way that's particularly transmissible via Instagram, right? You're not just seeing Death Cab. You're seeing the Transatlanticism tour, and you just write that at the bottom, and everyone who knows the album knows what you saw and is jealous of the fact that, or not jealous, of the fact that you saw that show. And then I think that making the shows a special thing like that in this way that's easily packageable and easily transmissible for social media gives them an added value, gives an added value to the people who are there, right? Real Earl heads, it's not just that I saw Earl and he performed some songs from Doris and, you know, next time he did or didn't, right? Real Earl heads are like, I saw the 10th anniversary Doris tour. I bought the 10th anniversary Doris t-shirt, and like that is, and I'm able to turn that into social capital for me in this very visible way, in a way that's not just, it's social capital for me because now I can talk about it at cocktail parties. I don't know, at ciphers, like I could say, oh, of course, when I saw Doris, in when I saw the 10th anniversary Doris tour, it was a lovely time. But like, right, like, you're able to use that as a signifier in your construction of personality online in that moment. And I think that that means having the artist doing part of the work to package the meaning of the live event for you makes these a different, these are Instagrammable.
No, I see what you're saying. And I think just to the maybe like to complete that thought, or just add to it, is that like in a society where our own sense of self-worth and how people view us, that social capital you speak of, is so wrapped up in social media, then it really does put an emphasis on this, like, what's like these like pre-made packageable, like Instagrammable, TikTokable events, which will reflect back on us as a person, even regardless if it's a fiction or not. And I guess there is something which maybe, like, you know, we don't need to go too far down that road, but there is something also sort of gross about that, I guess we could say. But yeah, I will say that, like, going back to one of your point also about like making a good live show, I think that, you know, obviously that kind of, would you say that that kind of, I mean, every band, every musician can like put on a good live show, but yeah. I think that there's obviously also certain bands and certain styles of music that it kind of like lends itself more to. Like, I'm kind of thinking about, like, regardless of what you think about this, and I know we have a disagreeing opinions on Ty Segall, but like, the dude puts on a good live show. Almost every 2 years he switches, or every year he switches out his backing band. So it's like, so it's like a kind of like different vibe, and even like how many instruments are on stage and how many aren't. You know, or you think about like the OCs, sticks with like the same like lineup, but is like always going to be like a fun, crazy show. But like maybe that's like maybe a little bit harder for like Death Cab, who like I think I saw like 20 years ago, and they put on a great show. It's fine, but I mean, like, nobody's coming for the Death Cab jam.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that there's a thing that for musicians, and I think this is a larger discussion about music in the digital age, which has clearly given music so much in certain ways. But I do think that when musicians are real, real, real professionals, when they are just playing, when they have just played 100,000 hours of guitar in a 10,000 little clubs and bars, because they were just like a working musician in the 70s or 80s or 60s, and their ability to do so, the music they make is just tight in a way that is hard to get to when, I think, in a recording first world, right? I think the recordings sound better to a certain extent just because it's, they can do like incredible things just live and make it tight. I think that the time feels different. I mean, I just think that it's one of the challenges, especially for something like rock music, right? Where like bands used to be able to play all the time, and people coming up would play like an extraordinary amount. Like, why are the band so good? It's because they played every single bar in Canada for 8 years.
Yeah, right. No, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
you know,
for sure. Yeah.
Or playing things where you're like, oh, you know, those Motown bands played on the Motown Review, played 3 shows a day, 5 days right. a week. And that affects things. And I think it's harder for certain kinds of music and for certain bands to get. And that does, I think, change the kind of live environment.
I mean, I'm also kind of curious, though, like thinking about in relation to our conversations about like the sort of, I don't want to say like the death of the album, but like, I think a sort of de-emphasis on like the capital A album as like a like encompassing like self-contained work of art. I do kind of wonder, this is just going to be kind of like a bit of a passing trend, particularly. And then I'm thinking specifically in relation to like electronic music DJs who like will never have, if they even have an album, but we're never going to have like, we're going to play it in its entirety, because oftentimes you don't even go to expect to really hear a track off that record. You go to just hear the DJ, whatever they're DJing, right. You know, which I think is kind of interesting. And I wonder if like, if maybe this is also, if there's something related to a sort of a pull from this sort of live event, like electronic music scene, that's kind of pulling away from the sort of classic sort of you go and see a band play. I don't know if there's some sort of something there. I don't know, because there's something that I think it's what I'm trying to say is there's something contained within like going to see a DJ, quote unquote, see, because actually you're not really watching the DJ. You're just there to like hear it and listen and like see, maybe experience a light show that like I think a touring band can't do or can't have. And then like each DJ event is like kind of like really unique. And yes, of course, like every concert is like quote unquote unique. But if they're like have a set list, which they're kind of repeating, like a band is repeating like over and over, like with each show, that it's like, you can even look that up on the internet. You can figure out what's going to happen. But like a DJ set at like whatever Berghain or something from like Ross from Friends or something, like is like going to be different there than it is in Atlanta and somewhere else.
In which Saxon invents the Grateful Dead.
That's a good point.
And like and they're different, you know, the different kinds of experiences. I mean, I do think interestingly that DJs are a clear exception to what I was saying about the lack about how things hit differently, that DJs are a kind of musician who still have that opportunity to just play an extraordinary amount. So the number of like DJs who are right. as good...
They're like the gigging yeah. musicians.
DJs though. Who are as good at DJing as like any like Motown bass player was at playing bass, just because like they've put in 100,000 hours of DJing like, and it's possible for them to do so. Just like the level of technical facility and comfort that some of these folks have is incredible. No, I think that's an interesting point. And I imagine that you know, what you're seeing is kind of different kinds of experiences. And that I think that maybe with this trend, what you're looking at is kind of the like the album and certain kind of song-based music as like more of like a signifier experience, that like this means that versus a party experience, a different kind of live music experience. In terms of like cycles, I also, this reminds me a lot, and maybe this is a good way to kind of close things down on this shorty, is I was just remembering when I first started listening to music, and maybe this puts all of this in a certain level of perspective, because I do think that some of this is deeply generational.
I was about to say, yeah, that was going to be my next question, yeah.
Is that, like, I remember first starting to, like, pay attention to music and pay attention to the music press in, like, 2004, 2005. And there was this big wave of reunions of bands who had last released albums with like their classic lineups 10 or 20 years ago. And I remember it's this funny thing, like some band and the meaning and value of those bands. Like I remember like looking up like the Buzzcocks, and the Buzzcocks got back together too early. The Buzzcocks got back together in like 97 and no one really cared. And if the Buzzcocks had gotten back together 8 years later, they would have headlined Irving Plaza. I mean, I actually don't know if the Buzzcocks in 97 did. Like, don't you? I mean, please do at me, like, fervent like Buzzcocks fans. I want to chat. But especially that second Krautrock influenced album, the one after Singles Hell Going yeah. Steady, that's a really Hell good yeah. record. But yeah, no, so like all these bands, like the Pixies got back together right around then. Echo and the Bunnymen got back together right around then, in this early 2000s, where Generation X is as old then as millennials are, you know, vaguely now. And this sense of like, it's been 20 years, we have disposable income, it's a different touring circuit. Probably some of these bands are bringing out folks who, like, I don't know, the people who are filling a Death Cab for Cutie concert, I don't know how many live shows they're going to anymore. And so it can pull back in a market segment that maybe you're not hitting as much. I don't know, maybe they're keeping up with Tiny Desk Concerts and seeing Mitski, but like, as mentioned in the article, but like, I don't know. And so, yeah, so like, I do think that some of this is just cyclical, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if like in 15 years, there will be, or 15 or 20 years, another, you know, a set of reunion albums for some of the bigger indie bands now. I don't know, 10-year Clara reunion albums.
Yeah, no, that's possible. And I will say that, like, yeah, that's a good point. And I will say that it is just so interesting how, and we've mentioned this before on the podcast, but how it is how interesting how social media, particularly like TikTok, and like Instagram Reels or whatever, like can like flatten that time frame though. Cause like I went to like a beach house concert like maybe like 2 years ago, and I could not tell you, it was really surprised how many like teenagers were there. And then I realized like, oh, like beach house had like, I think two of their songs pulled out of their back catalog and like put on TikTok Reels that were like blowing up. And it's like, oh, that's kind of an interesting thing as well, that it's almost like, in that sense, it's for the benefit of like beach house to not play an album in full. You know, because yeah, they go, because it's a way to appeal to both like the nostalgic millennial who's still listening to their new albums, but then also appeal to the younger crowd that just wants to hear those few songs because they saw it on a TikTok Reel. And I will just finish with something that Pranav Twain, apologies if I'm pronouncing that name wrong, but said in the article that we'll link to at the very last paragraph, they wrote, if your music tastes have gotten stuck in 2014, so might your worldview. And I think that's a it's a good thing maybe to like look in the mirror and ask yourself. I thought that was a good point. And, you know, maybe go see a younger band. It might blow your mind. So, yeah, we'll be back next week. Music by Bird Language. Thanks for listening to this shorty. See you at the Interpol concert.